Today, I'm talking to Doug Bowen, founder of the Doug Bowen Zia O'Hara team at Douglas Elliman in Brooklyn and New York City. Most recently, Doug's team set a sales record by over $2 million over the former sales record in Clinton Hill of Brooklyn with the sale of their listing, Pfizer Mansion. They have sold over $2 billion in homes combined, and they have sold over 300 townhomes in their market. That is more than any other agent or team in Brooklyn. Before Doug and I hit record for the interview today, he shared with me that this will be the first time he has shared his story. Out of his story and all of the adventures along the way, Doug reveals how to build the foundation for record-breaking results. Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and all our business to the next level. All right, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. And today we have on the show, from New York City and Brooklyn with Douglas Elliman, Doug Bowen. Doug, thanks so much for coming on.
I'm so psyched to be here. Happy to be sharing this time with you and talking about all things real estate.
So excited. So first of all, everybody, I'm going to give you just a little bit I know about Doug. He's a top agent in New York City and Brooklyn. Obviously, you're with Douglas Elliman. You've been in the business for, I think, was it 20 years now?
Yep, 21 years.
21 years. You have helped found another brokerage that's prevalent in New York. You are with Douglas Elliman today. You also have just broken a sales record in Brooklyn by over $2 million, which happens to be the listing that I look like I'm sitting inside of today. And tell us a little bit more of what we need to know about you before we start digging deep and asking questions.
Well, thank you for the shout out about the Pfizer Mansion. It was a great sale for us in Brooklyn, a very unique piece of property, really a living piece of New York history. And we were actually the third brokers on that building. So to have the success at the end of the day was really thrilling for both our clients and for us. So really amazing piece of property, really fun sale, and a really good kind of handing a baton from sellers to buyers story as well. So thank you for that. I co-lead the Doug Bowen Zia O'Hara team at Douglas Elliman. We have 8 people on our team. And we're pretty diverse in our business in a very diverse New York City market. I would say the kind of 3 legs of our stool, our townhouses. We have a very strong presence in the townhouse market in Manhattan and Brooklyn, which leads to, experience in townhouse development. We work with lots of developers as well, but also individual buyers and sellers like the people of the Pfizer Mansion. We have a strong presence in the new development sector in New York, and that's a part of our business that's very active right now and is growing. We're at the helm of the IT building in Brooklyn called One Prospect Park West. It literally sits at the gateway to Prospect Park. So it overlooks Grand Army Plaza and Prospect Park. It's a 64 apartment, $220 million sellout. We're just under 40% sold to date, and we are not even a live building yet. So we're actually doing incredibly well. And if you know Brooklyn, this part of Park Slope, this is an A location. And this building, which is already getting a ton of press, is single-handedly elevating price points in all of Park Slope real estate.
So you guys are breaking records on the $10 million properties. You're breaking records on the townhomes. You're raising. You're kind of at the front of raising. Obviously, the market is doing well.
The market is doing well.
But you're on the front of it.
We're very fortunate. You know, we do, we kind of split our business between Manhattan and Brooklyn. I'm sitting in our Flatiron office right now, which is our base camp, but we also have two desks at the Fort Greene office in Brooklyn. And, you know, coming out of the pandemic, you know, it was the tale of two cities almost between Brooklyn and Manhattan. Brooklyn, the day we went back to work, was on fire. So on June 28th of 2020, we took off like a rocket in Brooklyn. And it really has not stopped. Manhattan took a little while to recover, a little slower to recover, but, you know, I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I was born at St. Vincent's Hospital here in Manhattan. I've lived in Brooklyn for 27 years. And I can tell you, Barbara Corcoran said it very well in the beginning days of the pandemic. This is an incredibly resilient city, and it's proving it in spades right now. In kind of a more macro picture, you know, the most and largest indicator of just how resilient it is would be in the rental market, which literally fell off the cliff in the pandemic. And the discussion was that it would take 2 to 3 years to recover. And here we are, you know, less than about a year later, or a little over a year later, and the rental market has come back with a vengeance. Everybody wants to come back to New York. There are literally bidding wars in many segments of the rental market right now. So, there you have it.
Good to know, because I come kind of here, but straight from the source.
Yeah.
So Doug, tell us, because we have so much to ask you, because we're going to go into later your team, how it's structured and winning business. But first, let's learn more about you. How and why did you get into the business? What a little bit about your life and how you led into it. What's your story?
Great story. There is no broker that you're going to meet that has my story. I am a retired movie set builder turned broker. I spent 17 years building movie sets all across this country and out of the country. And I was down in Mexico doing this little film called Titanic, which I guess a lot of people know. I was a construction foreman on the film Titanic in Mexico. So I literally built the Titanic. And help sink it as well, because if it didn't sink, then we wouldn't have had a movie. But Titanic.
Wow, that's like a whole interview right there. So, did you hang with Leonardo DiCaprio?
I actually lived right next door to Kate Winslet when I was down in Mexico for a short period of time. They transferred her to a place where they could keep a little better eye on her. They were young, Leo and Kate, at that time. And I think that there was lots of fun being had in Mexico when we were participating.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. She needed to be available a lot for that movie.
Of course. I mean, we were down there on an island, you know, because, you know, there's this movie set studio that was built in Mexico for Titanic. So, you know, we were all on that huge site, you know, almost all the time, right?
Unbelievable. So what happened? Yeah.
So what happened is that I finished Titanic, and I was living in Brooklyn already. And
what year?
In 1997. Okay. That we finished Titanic. I moved back from the West Coast to Brooklyn in 94. And I've been in Brooklyn ever since. And it was really the first time I ever had any money in my life. And instead of putting it into the stock market, the light bulbs kind of went off. Movie set builder, maybe I could figure out a piece of property to buy. And I bought a townhouse in 1998 in Brooklyn, in Clinton Hill, in an area of Clinton Hill that in the day was a little bit rough around the edges, but now is a prime part of Clinton Hill. So, you know, that was inspiring to buy and, you know, rebuild a townhouse in Brooklyn. You know, I literally brought my movie set friends and we all lived in the house while we were working on it. We did that for the first.
Awesome.
We did that for the first three townhouses that I bought in Brooklyn, and that's the story. The story is I bought a townhouse. I did well with it. I bought another one. I did well with that, and it was somewhere between the second and the third townhouse property that I decided that this real estate thing was going to work out for me. And so I decided to hang up my cleats in the movie industry and become a broker. And I kind of put the crowbar into the door, so to speak, at the downtown Tribeca office of Douglas Elliman. They were expanding to Brooklyn, where I live. And Ken Mallion gave me an opportunity down there. And I joined Douglas Elliman then, and they lured me back to Douglas Elliman 6 years ago, and I couldn't be happier.
Well, that's amazing. So I love you. What did you say that you crowbarred your way through the door?
Yeah, I put the crowbar in the door because I didn't really have any experience except for buying my own buildings and also obviously putting tenants into place. But, you know, I had a lot of... you know, I mean, I guess that gave me a lot more experience than some people who are just coming into the industry with absolutely no experience. And I took off in the industry relatively quickly as a result. You know,
so why do you think that was? Yeah. How did it happen fast? How did you get your, for obviously you were kind of in the momentum of your own deals, but how did you transition into winning deals? What was the, what got you your traction to being an actual broker or agent?
Well, it, you know, it was a really different time. This was a time when like BlackBerries were just coming into the industry.
So, right. Yeah.
So New York is a very varied landscape and a very specific market. And let's just say that back in those days, residential brokerage was much more cloak and dagger than it is now. So you literally had to kind of watch your faxes, right? Or someone
I
might
remember
steal
that. Isn't that
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy,
so,
right?
But you know, I was pretty thrifty, and you know, there was some decent training, and my first deal was kind of I met a couple of brokers during training, and one of them was an older man than I was, and he's still a good friend of mine, Richard Balzano, another top broker here at Elliman, and you know, I had met this couple. We had a gallery space in Tribeca, so you could do floor time, right? So I was doing my floor time and somebody walked in and I, you know, used all of my, you know, all of my skills and charm to try to make myself available to them. And I took them out to see a couple of apartments, and then they called me and they told me that they had made an appointment directly with a broker at a condominium downtown on Barrow Street, and that they were going to meet that broker. And I was like, all right. And my friend Richard Balzano, who was literally sitting next to me, put his hand over my receiver and said, "You go on that appointment. You just go and show up at that appointment right now." And so I literally told them,
"Love Richard,
meet you at the appointment." I didn't even tell the broker, and I just showed up at the appointment. And there we were, and we looked at the apartment, and then I negotiated my first deal.
Nice doll. I mean, like, it's funny. It reminds me of a Zig Ziglar story. People tell you something like, "There's a story. I'll be quick. I want to buy." He was selling pots and pans. "I want to buy these pots and pans right here when I have the money." And he heard he didn't have the money. And the guy had it. Well, anyway, but it's like what you just said in sales and being an agent, the client called or the prospect called, said what they were doing. They had phoned you and you showed up.
That's right.
And like you said, a lot of people would hear that as bye, but you heard that as a nice little hello, welcome. And you walked through the door.
I have been showing up. It's just part of my work ethic for a very long before that, you know, being a carpenter in the movie industry and waking up in the morning and being on time. Right. I remember an old shop that I worked at in Brooklyn here where the guy who ran that shop, literally the first time you met him, he walked you over to a sign and he said, look at that sign. Tell me what that sign says. And that sign said, OTME, O-T-M-E. You know what that means? He said to me, on time means early.
Oh,
OTME. That had a big impression on me.
So. Wow. We've had a team member that always says, Adam Vickers always says, what does he say? He says, early is on time.
Early is on time.
Is late.
Same principle.
And late is unacceptable.
Late is unacceptable.
Love it. I mean, like the simplicity of that, right? I love it. And interpreting what the other person is telling you and seeing opportunities. So your first deal.
Yep. That was my first deal.
You had some good, and here's having the right people around you.
Yes. That was a, you know, that was a, he was a young broker too, but he had some more kind of life experience perhaps. And, you know, all he had to do was tell me and off I was. I was just out the door and I was at that appointment. And then I scrambled to do my first deal and put together my first board package and all that stuff that you learn here in New York. So.
But your first what package?
Board package.
Board package.
What's so, a board package? Right. So, you know, New York, you know, most of the country hears about New York real estate and they hear about the very sexy condominiums that are being built all over. I'm working on a very sexy condominium right now in Brooklyn. But the truth is that the largest part of the housing stock here in New York City is co-ops, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a difference between a co-op and a condo.
I don't know what one is. Yep.
Right. Exactly. So exactly. Co-ops, a lot of the co-ops require, a board interview, right? But they also require, putting together a rather comprehensive amount of information about buyers to be reviewed by the co-op board. And you know, the famous stories are from, you know, the Park Avenue co-ops where literally you have to not only pay all cash, but you have to have, you know, 1.5 times the amount of the apartment, not including the amount that you're going to pay all cash for it in the bank liquid to be able to even buy in the building. Right.
Wow. Yeah.
But that translates down to all of the other boroughs, which also have co-ops in them. And, you know, but they still have these kind of historical processes that you need to go through in order to be able to purchase a leasehold in a property, which is what a co-op is versus buying a condo.
Right. I mean, just like you get voted in.
You get voted in.
Those in Atlanta. We have one of those in Atlanta. Most people don't even know about it.
And they can keep you out and not tell anybody and not tell you the reason why, which is not constantly right. Coming up on, you know, people's docket politically is that co-ops can essentially legally discriminate in New York. And they do. Which this I don't think is a good thing. But it
well,
is.
I would agree. This isn't a political show, but it fascinates me how that all, like the whole irony of that pans out, but that's all right.
Yep.
Anyway, but that adds a whole new, like, we'll start a political show later, but that like adds a whole new level to what you're doing and what you're learning, but also gives you knowledge of your market and your people and your clients. So you are now, you know, you went from there's your first deal where somebody kind of nudged you and pushed you into your first deal. And now 20 years later, you've got a few developments coming. You've just broken a record with your partner, Zaya, for, you know, a little over 2 million, maybe over the highest sell price in Brooklyn. And is that one in Clinton Hill of Brooklyn? Yeah, or where
that's a record-breaking price in Clinton Hill. It's a very high
price. That's right. Okay.
Over $9 million in Brooklyn is a big number, but there are other parts of Brooklyn that have, you know, higher price points. You know, $9 million if I picked that Pfizer mansion up and I put it on Columbia Terrace in Brooklyn Heights, it would have been $20 million.
Wow. crazy number.
So that tells you a little bit about kind of even the locations inside the prime parts of Brooklyn. You have to understand Brooklyn is New York's largest borough and mm-hmm. most populous borough. There's 2.8 million people in Brooklyn. And really this part of Brooklyn that I'm discussing is geographically not that large compared to the whole landmass of Brooklyn. I mean, I used to teach about emerging markets in Brooklyn many, many years ago for the Real Estate Board of New York. But, you know, those emerging markets that I was teaching about, 15 years ago are now places where we're selling now, and they're not emerging markets anymore. They've moved up to be secondary markets to some of the prime markets in Brooklyn. Clinton Hill was really an emerging market when I became a broker. And now Clinton Hill is, you know, in the top tier neighborhoods in Brooklyn.
So let's talk about, as an agent, because listening to you and watching how you think and do business, you clearly have an ability to see the big picture and then show up for the work when it comes down to, you know, clouds and dirt, getting into the small picture. You got to see the big picture. You got to show up and deliver for the product and the client. How has that translated, and what has translated truly into your success in being on the front of developments today?
That's a great question. I think I'm a lifelong New Yorker, and I'm super passionate about this city, but more importantly, I'm really passionate about the way that cities grow. And so we have a hashtag that we use that is always building. In fact, we made a movie about our team called Always Building. And you know, that goes back to my carpenter roots. I really do think of brokerage as building, and I think of teams as building, companies as building. It's, you know, that works for my brain, right? Is that you have to practically break things down and build if you don't build the foundation, you can't build the building, right? So I had no problem spending the time when I was a younger broker building a foundation that could support a bigger building, because that's where I could see my particular set of skills going to. Yeah. I didn't want to build a small building. I wanted to build a bigger building because I was interested in, I was interested in more than just selling apartments. And I knew that right from the get-go. I almost went into commercial brokerage, honestly. I came very close to going into commercial brokerage. And it really was kind of that gut check question, because I was offered a position with a company called Massey Knackel, which was everybody in New York in investment sales and commercial brokerage know who Massey Knackel is, and Bob Knackel and Paul Massey are two very, very big real estate figures. And their firm kind of was exploding when I was a young broker. And I was really interested in their idea, which was this idea of territories. And I was offered a position to join Massey Knackel. And I was simultaneously working my crowbar magic down in Tribeca with Ken Malley.
Crowbar magic. Right.
And,
yeah.
And I had to make a choice. And at the end of the day, I really valued kind of the interpersonal kind of emotional component that residential brokerage takes. And I knew that I would be very, very, very good at it. You know, it's commercial, putting together commercial deals. And we can talk about that a little bit later, because not all brokers do commercial and have any idea about how to put together a commercial deal, but we do that. But that's much more, that's much more cut and dry, right? That's a lot about you know, cap rates and facts and figures. And, you know, there's much less kind of getting in the sandbox of emotions that you have to go through when you're dealing with real people and real people's lives, right? Which is an essential skill for a residential broker.
So do you think, because I keep hearing you say a replay in my mind of, I could have gone into residential or commercial and the gut check, and it sounds like it wasn't like a gut check on who's going to be more successful. The gut check was on what was right for you, and what That's did right. that mean?
That's completely true. It really was just like, you know, when, yeah, what's going to bring you more joy? Right.
So here's an interesting correlation that
I mean, I don't want to get all Maria Kondo on you, but
it's all right. Maria Kondo. I don't even know what that is, but I just know what you mean. Like, but seriously, because this is what we do on this show sometimes. But you said, I'm writing notes, but you said, I love how you started with like you're a builder and then you're talking about foundations. And if you want something bigger, you work harder on the foundation of what you're building. And at the same time, in looking at your career, there's this, I believe, assumption by a lot of people is, if I'm going to be successful, what's the path that just is going to get me to success? You are looking at your foundation of who you are and what your foundation is to build off of better. And in doing that, what is the journey that you actually want to take? And the destination becomes clear. Like, you don't decide what happens. You decide your actions and those decide what happens. Or where you end up?
No, I mean, I guess when you put it in those terms, I've always been a process-oriented person. Most brokers' biggest mistake is to focus on the results instead of the process. Mm. You know, the results are a byproduct of the process. And if you find a way to love the process and enjoy the process and the work, the results are always going to come to you. And you'll also set yourself up for the long haul, right? There's so many people who burn out in this industry. I get it. I've been there, but I built a big enough foundation and I'm adaptable enough as a person and a broker to keep asking myself the questions about what do I want my business to look like? You know, how do I want to spend my day? And what am I good at? And what am I not good at? And then try to figure it out and, you know, make the decisions and really, you know, follow my gut. My gut's done me well many, many times over the years. And, you know, there's another saying, you know, that I'm sure you've heard, which is KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Love it. Keep it simple.
Paring it back. Don't overcomplicate it. We just sat in a marketing meeting with Zia and another senior member of our team, Paul Johansson, and we're putting together kind of a new group underneath our brand that is really townhouse focused. And we're launching this new idea into the world. And we've kind of, you know, we've done the photo shoots, we've put together the collateral material and mailing strategy that we want to use. And we've branded it, given it a logo. And we're just about to kind of send it out into the world. And it's been this process of just, you know, this first moment, you know, there'll be other, you know, mailers and other ideas about this group. And we're on the top of the townhouse brokerage in all of New York City. We have a ton of information and collect, you know, material and photographs and data.
You've already done it. You've already got the track record.
We do.
Like everybody check out the website. I've looked at, I mean, you guys have like, you've already got so much of a track record. Now you're just going to label it and package it and deliver on it more.
Yeah. But not overcomplicated it. You know, I mean, you know, essentially the only piece of data that's going to be on that first mailer is that we've done over 300 townhouse transactions. And believe me when I tell you, when I talk to my close friends, and Jared knows Vicky Barron very well. And, you know, Vicky Barron is one of the most brilliant brokers in New York City. I call Vicky, you know, the ethereal broker. She is one of the very top agents in New York, and a very, very good friend of mine. And, you know, she taught me a lot about brokerage. But when I talk to her about townhouses and I tell her how many townhouses I've sold, she's like, it blows her mind.
Amazing.
And when she was at CORE, she brought me in to just help her and advise her on some very, very, very high priced townhouses that she was working on in the West Village and in Soho. You know, my experience and our team's experience in the townhouse sector, you know, knows no geographic territory in New York City. It's applicable to a $50 million townhouse on the Upper East Side, as it is to a $1 million townhouse at Bed-Stuy.
So let's talk about your teams, because I love how we start with your, just to review quickly for everybody. You were a construction guy on movie sets. The last one was
movie set builder.
Right.
I still have the card.
Oh, really?
Of course.
I love that.
You don't give up the local 52 card here in New York.
So you're educating me now. Oh, I love it. So
no,
you're
that's
on-site
a whole
construction in movies for oh gosh, what's the name of the movie?
I was a construction foreman on Titanic.
Titanic. Thank you. I'm trying to
that
say Terminator. Not Terminator. Yeah. Oh,
I did a couple of Stallone movies, not Schwarzenegger. Two Stallone movies as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Assassins, which was done in Miami. It's the famous shower scene between Sylvester Stallone and Sharon Stone. The shower scene for that movie.
Oh,
personally. So the scene was terrible. The scene was awful. It was the most unsexy, choreographed,
really?
Spritzed on Hollywood.
Chemistry, those two, I guess. I don't know.
Although I love Sharon Stone, but, and then I later did a Stallone movie with Antonio Banderas and a very young Julianne Moore called Assassins in Seattle, which was about two top assassins.
We're from New York, Miami, Seattle.
Yep. I did movies all over the United States and out of the United States. So
crowbar your way into the business.
Yep.
And then you still never remember, you remember show up early.
Yep.
Show up and work hard. And in that, building a good foundation for where you want to go. And by the way, what you actually want to do in the processes in life you live every day. So evolving that, now we've got you with a partner, Zia, who's amazing. She's going to be on the show, by the way, everybody. And you have a team that seems to do quite, you guys have sold over 300 townhomes, and you don't only sell townhomes. And you've also sold how many billions? Is it 2 billion?
Approximately $2 billion worth of real estate. Yeah. We've been in the top 20 of all teams at Douglas Elliman the last few years in a row. We've been top producers at Douglas Elliman ever since I've been back here. But, you know, to team building, that's a great, really, really awesome question, and one that I really, I like to talk about, actually. I was very reticent to kind of be outwardly a team. There's some brokers who, you know, they effectively run teams, but it's really them and their brand only, instead of kind of a team brand. When the team thing got started, it almost felt like it was a cliche to me. It's even more so today, and I'll get to that in a second. But I was reluctant to form the Doug Bowen team, which is what it started as. But this essentially, it was purely a business decision. I was literally losing pitches because I was not outwardly a team. I wasn't a big enough broker individually and I was pitching against other bigger brokers, and just my percentage of pitch, winning listing pitches, you know, wasn't where I wanted it to be. And I really distilled it down to the fact that I wasn't a team. And so I decided to become the Doug Bowen team. And it started as, you know, just the Doug Bowen team. I had always have wanted to have a partner. And when I was at CORE, I had developed a very good partnership relationship with another person. And we did tons and tons of business together, but we didn't become kind of a team. And then I came back to Douglas Elliman and I was, you know, just, it was just me. And then I formed the Doug Bowen team. And I was, just about 5 years ago. And I had a lot of stuff going on personally, and I was had a lot of business, but it was all over the place. And my branding strategist, Jasmine Takanikos, kept reminding me that she wanted me to meet this woman, Zia O'Hara. And I was so bad, I got to tell you, I kept putting it off. And I'm like, no, but Jasmine, she's so awesome and I love her. I have to meet with this woman, Zia, because I don't want to disappoint Jasmine. And I finally set up the meeting literally for like 8 o'clock in the morning at the La Petite Albate, which was right around the corner from our old offices, because I wanted to kind of, you know, get it out of the way before my day exploded into the way that my day explodes every day. Right. And I walk into this little narrow cafe and there's only one person sitting at the table and it's Zia. And I really was not looking to hire anybody onto my team. And 15 minutes later, I was practically groveling to have her come and work with me. It was like that quick. Right when I saw her, I said, this is it. You have to do something about this and you have to do it now.
What was it?
Zia has, I just saw all of what we've built today. And I can even see where we're going more clearly where we're going than I ever could have. I see what we've built today. I saw that right in that moment. I'm like, this is the person that balances me out, that will soften my edges, because I can be very, I can be that sort of, you know, very direct and sometimes slightly profane and coarse, you know, person. And I knew that having someone like Zia was going to be great for me personally as a broker, and what we could do together would far exceed what I would ever be able to do alone. And it was off to the races. A year after she joined the team, we both had the same thought at the same time. We're both Aquarians. I'm like, I want you to be my partner. She's like, great. You know, and from that day on, we've been 50-50 partners on everything. And, you know, the level of trust is just incredible. And it's really the best business decision that I've ever made. And also, you know, some sort of, you know, spiritual, you know, soul work mate type of, you know, happening that we both agreed upon right from the get-go, right from the very, like,
that's unbelievable. You don't hear of that very often at all, that happens. On that, and everybody wants me to go deeper, but I want to ask about your team structure, because there's everybody else who wants to hear about that. Mm-hmm. On that, to sum that up before we talk about the actual team structure, it sounds like you knew who you were, you knew what you value. Like, listening to you, you value joy, you value integrity, you value doing things right, you value showing up, hard work. So knowing who you are is how you knew when you met the person, and knowing what your flaws were, knowing, you kept saying too, like, I know what I'm not good at. Is that kind of, I know everybody's going to want you and say, why didn't you let him articulate what made that partner? Because everybody wants that right partner. And it pretty much happens a million times out of one.
Yeah. Zia was truly the partner that I've been looking for 10 years. I mean, I was aware that I was a collaborative person, that I wanted to have a partner. I was fully aware of that. I was at a kind of, you know, sensitive time in my life at that point. And I wasn't like at that moment, you know, my radar was not out in that way. But once it came into focus, it was like, I just locked in on it. I'm like, don't let this go by. Do whatever you have to do. And
that's an incredible story.
Ultimately, you know, the business decision part of it was that, it's taken a while for me to get back to like, I made more money for a number of years before I met Zia than I made the first few years we were together. But I was never as happy and never loved the work the way, I mean, I've always loved the work, but I had never loved the work as much as I've loved it since Zia and I have been partners. I knew once again that if I made the investment into Zia and we built a foundation for our brand, that we would get to today where we are now making decisions to take what is already, you know, arguably an incredibly successful business. And I absolutely can see how to scale our business. We have the personnel and we have the ability literally to double our business. And
great pivot point. Thank you. Great pivot point. So from finding the right partner to scaling the business, how are you structured that you know, because there are not many people in our business that can say, I know exactly how to scale this now. How is your team structured to do that?
I'm sure that everybody would love for me to say that I have I really have broken that down and, you know, can put it into a spreadsheet, but that's not really my strength.
Go ahead.
Neither of us are that person. But we found the support on our team to plug that part of the equation, right? So,
how many people and who does what? But first, it's more about you.
Yeah, I mean, we have 8 people on our team.
You were going to say something. You were going to say it's more about.
I can just see the expansion of our business on a number of different, in a number of different areas. You know, we have, you know, risen through the ranks of the townhouse brokers, and we're kind of in the top of that heap, especially in Brooklyn. And we now have quite, you know, we've kind of expanded our new development business extensively. And that's a sector where I think that we can continue to grow. And I think it's just identifying the strengths of the people on the team. So, you know, I mean, we have junior agents, senior agents, and then we have, you know, hardcore administrative people, and then we job in administrative people, kind of like our executive assistant just keeps us pointed in the right direction every day, right? I mean, I literally described Lily. She's amazing. You know, she's at the pinball machine controlling the flippers, right? Mm-hmm. And Zia and I are the balls bouncing off the bumpers every day. And she literally keeps us on point. And then she also is incredibly good with marketing and look and feel stuff and reminding us personally about follow-up. I would say the weakness of our scaling idea is that our systems are not yet mature enough, our tracking systems, but we're definitely investing and putting some more effort into that.
Tell us though, as you explain all this, so now to your team, how many agents, how many admins, and who does what?
We have 8 agents. We really only have 1 director of operations who's our executive assistant. And she really kind of, is the conductor of our orchestra, right? And she is, obviously her, the top of her priority list are Doug and Zia, but, and we actually held, while we trained Lily, we made sure our other agents knew that very clearly, that we didn't want them, to be going to Lily for things that they could do themselves. And we do still have that as part of our practice. Lily is there to facilitate the back end of many of the other agents and help keep the overall kind of organizational thing in queue. We are, we are thinking about bringing in somebody else to take, because Lily is so talented and so wonderful. There are some things that we're thinking about taking off her plate, especially on the R&D side, like just research and development side, so that she can, we can expand kind of some of the marketing and look and feel and social media part of our team that is all in the works. But what the scaling part of it is that Zia, and this I knew right away, I mean, Zia has an incredible network for us to tap in, and I have an incredible network, and together our networks sometimes intersect, but also sometimes lead us in new directions. And when you have 2 people from 2 different backgrounds who share common interests and goal, and both have different networks of people that are pretty vast, you really, all you have to do is come up with a way to touch those networks with this brand, and just with, I said it before I met Zia, all I need to do is sit down and concentrate, at a phone and pick it up, and I'm going to create business. I'm just that person in a good market, in a bad market. In fact, in a bad market, I'm probably better than when it's a good market. I just know how to put together deals. Just the way I am.
It is
my gift. It really is.
So now we're going to talk about that. Putting together deals. We should just start over and just talk about that. Just kidding, because I love this interview and your story. Putting together deals, because when you just said that, you said, I can pick up the phone and literally put deals together. Most people think that means I'm cold calling until somebody agrees to sell my house. And that is not what you're doing.
No.
You're putting deals together, which is a very different thing. Yeah. So let's talk about that. What does that mean when you say that?
Well, I have this background, and, some people would say that it's a really creative background. I met my wife on stage, right? We were both actors. My wife's still an actor, and I decided that one actor in the family was enough. And then I started acting like a movie set builder. It was a pretty good role for me. And, that you've already heard that part of the story. But, when I meet people and they hear about my background, they're like, do you miss it? And I'm like, not in the least. I really don't. And, the reason why I don't miss it is that for me personally, for Doug Bowen, this is the most creative thing that I've ever done in my life.
You're so right. Yeah.
And so, that's what gets me up in the morning and gets me to the gym and allows me to lead people, because leading people is no easy.
So I'm going to make you answer the question now, Doug. You're not answering the question. What does it mean to put together deals? Like, will you take this for granted?
Right.
Most people are like, so somebody's going to hire me. Mm-hmm.
Well,
so you've got to put the deal together. So
right.
I want to answer the question, but this is your question to answer.
So, yeah. I know so many people, and now at this point, after doing thousands of deals, if I'm reaching out to old clients, and that I haven't touched in a while, and here it is, here we're talking again. And it's like, almost like, there, it's kind of like you pick up where you left off type of mentality. And either they're thinking about a change or they're like, oh my God, I should have called you. My friend is thinking about making a change, or, you know, and that's how that's where the deals are. And
exactly.
You know, if you, that's how you put them together, is if you listen to what your clients and you hear what people are telling you, you can understand how you can help them, which is ultimately what our job is. And
exactly.
You know, that's, you know,
and you hear one person wanting to buy something, one person wanting to sell something, one person wanting to do this, and just listening, like, I love how you're like, listen, and then put those things together and bring deals together.
You obviously
and
know
then that creates more value to create more deals. But what are you saying?
You obviously know that I like to talk, but, you know, I mean, I'm actually, you know, when I, you know, when I meditate a lot about how much more I can listen and where I can find the silent moments in my life and how powerful those are to me, both personally and professionally. You know, we had a great moment yesterday when we had a, you know, our jobs can be a little bit about having difficult phone calls.
Yeah.
You know, these deals can get extremely emotional and high strung. And, you know, we had to make one of those calls yesterday, and I saw myself coming out of the gate, and Zia actually asked me to join that call. It's really kind of her baby, but I think she knew enough to say, you know, maybe having your voice on this call is going to be better. And I'm like, you want me on that call? I'm on that call. No problem. And that also kind of, you know, you get revved up. So I kind of, you know, I got on the call, and all of a sudden I'm launching into, you know, kind of my patter and idea. And then the client said something, and I don't know her as well as Zia does. And right when she said it, I knew to turn it off and let her talk. And it, you know, it ended up being a very productive call. And I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's going to help that deal, right? When I talk about deals with my team, or when I teach occasionally, I put it in the term of sculpting deals, right? Because as an agent, a residential real estate agent, you have to be incredibly adaptable. You know, the biggest mistake that you can make is to think that you, A, you know everything, and B, that you're the key to the deal. Because most of the time, you're not the key to the deal. The key is out there. We have to be the key finders. We have to find the key that unlocks the door, right? It's not about us. It's about our clients. It's about a husband and a wife, or a partner and a friend, or a designer or an architect or a developer. And, you know, they're out. Those are the keys to our success. And our job is to find it. Don't get me wrong. When I'm the key to the deal, which is less than 10% of the time, I will own that position 100%. But most of the time, it's not, you are not the key to the deal, period. So when I talk about sculpting deals and adaptability, what I'm really referring to is the idea that sometime the deals is going to be, you're going to be working with clay, and sometimes you're going to be working with wood, and sometimes you might be working with steel or concrete and or hemp or another material.
Right.
And sometimes you're going to mix those materials, but it really is that sort of hands-on awareness that, you know, you need to sculpt it. You need to build it. You don't want to get over your skis on deals. You know, you got to be able to pull back. You need to be able to, you know, I always tell people they have to have a map, and then they have to be equally as adaptable to then realize that they're going in the wrong direction and they need to either turn around or make a left turn, right? So
make sure that map lines up with reality too, by the way. But yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a, you know, deals unfold if you want to, you know, kind of make it.
I'm glad I made you answer that question. What a great answer. And then and you meditate every day, which I find pretty much every successful agent, at least that remains sane and actually likes what we do, meditates.
Yep. Meditation is big time important aspect of it.
So the final three.
Okay.
Number one, what has been your biggest resource in your success?
The biggest resource in my success? It's a great question. I would say my own personal resilience.
Resilience. Ooh, nice answer. Number two. Is there a book, or what book do we have to read that's changed your life or career?
Well, now you're asking me the question that I've already commented to you about. The most recent book that I read was Never Split the Difference, that really I have, adopted many things from that book into my business already. And I'm a big fan of Chris Voss. And I constantly am just remembering that idea when I'm negotiating deals, is that never split the difference, find another way, put it in a different way. You know, we just, I can't even tell you the amount of success stories I could talk about with regard to that particular book. So yeah. Great book. It's a great book.
It's like literally every team member has to read it. Yeah. Has to read it. You can't be on the team until you've read it.
That's a must read.
It's life changer. Number three, after this interview, if everybody listening forgets everything but one thing, what's the one thing you would say you've got to remember from our conversation today, or just in general?
I think the one thing that you have to remember about being a broker is that first and foremost, the very thing that you always have to remind yourself is that our job is to help people. And if you can always go back to that again and again and again, you'll always find a way to do it. And if you do it, you will be successful.
Wow, thank you. Doug Bowen with Douglas Elliman in New York City and Brooklyn. Thank you so much for being on the Jerry Metcalf podcast.
It was totally my pleasure. What a lovely way to spend some time. Inspiring and rewarding. Thank you so much.
Same here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. If you like this episode, please share it with friends. To find more episodes, search Jerry Metcalf Podcast on any platform for podcasts, or go to jerrymetcalfpodcast.com. That's JEREMETCALF podcast.com.